Wake up! It's time for Mornings with Gail on 1310 KFKA.
All right, Joe Biden asking a crowd at a Pittsburgh campaign event yesterday, "Do I look like a radical socialist?" That, of course, is the subject of my Facebook poll question today. See, I'm not quite sure, and maybe you can help me out on this, but what exactly does a radical socialist look like, Joe? And it begs the question, the fact that you would even make that statement, well, you going a little Shakespearean on us? Dost thou protest too much? Closing in on 608, now 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com. Northern Colorado's voice, Mornings with Gail, live and local via the Auto Collision Specialist Studio. So, yeah, Joe Biden, at least he's out of the basement now, speaking at a former steel factory in Pittsburgh, a 77-year-old Democrat nominee addressed allegations that he indeed would be a weak and servile Trojan horse for the left flank of his party, asking, "Do I look like a radical socialist with a soft spot for rioters?" Well, up until this point, kinda you do, Joe. Begging the question, do you have the courage, the strength of your convictions? Oh, wait, what are your convictions to begin with? Because it seems as though you're happy to go along, to get along, being the figurehead of the party, doing and saying whatever it takes to finally grab that presidential brass wing. Or am I being a little bit harsh? You tell me. 970-353-1310, 877-353-1310. Drop me a text on our 1310 KFKA text line at 31996. All right, the must-win Keystone State. Joe Biden went on to say, Trump advertises himself as a figure of order. He isn't. Calling the president a toxic presence who had, quote, poisoned the values we as a nation hold dear. Oh, let the finger pointing portion of the campaign commence. You know, we talked about it yesterday. What is the rest of the campaign going to look like as, well, Election Day draws ever closer? Well, it's going to get even more toxic, nastier. And so enter the finger pointing. Oh, it's your fault. Your fault, President Trump. There's all the violence. Because you foment that violence. You stoke the flames of violence. Well, that's what we're hearing now. Interesting. I don't quite see it that way. Biden went on to say, fires are burning and we have a president who fans the flames rather than fighting the flames. This, of course, attacking President Trump on one of the key points of his campaign, serving as a law and order president. President long ago forfeited any moral leadership in this country. Oh, that's right. We're going back to, hey, I'm a good guy. Joe's a nice guy. And it's our moral imperative to elect a nice guy. Now, what his policies are, well, we have no idea. We have no clue. But yeah, that seems to be the tenet that he's running. I'm a nice guy. He can't stop the violence, said Joe Biden, because for years he has fomented it. He also scoffed at claims he would give in to the socialist agenda of progressives like Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez giving in to the squad. Who's running the show in the Biden campaign? You tell me. But Biden, Joe Biden, out, said, "You know me. You know my heart. You know my story, my family's story. Ask yourself, do I look like a radical socialist with a soft spot for rioters?" Really? Come on, man. No, he didn't say that. But he may as well have. I mean, but once again, why would he even bring this up? 64 days until the election. Dugout Joe kicking off a battleground state tour following a months-long hiatus in the basement amidst the coronavirus pandemic. Your thoughts this morning, 970-353-1310, 877-353-1310. Now, just to be fair, if you happen to watch Joe Biden's speech from Pittsburgh, he had a pretty good thing going there for a while. I mean, it was a pretty rare adventure outside of his basement. And actually, there was some pretty good passages about national unity, mixed, of course, with the requisite blistering attacks on the president. Most importantly, he had finally crossed the Rubicon in condemning the crime and violence that's plaguing the nation's urban areas. Here's what he declared. Finally, taking, well, a stronger stance. Rioting isn't protesting. Looting is not protesting. Setting fires is not protesting. None of this is protesting. It's lawlessness, plain and simple. And those who do it should be prosecuted. All right, I'll give you some points for that, Joe. But it seems to me too little too late. Polling data, particularly in those oh-so-important battleground states, many of them plagued by urban violence, starting to show that, well, people might be a little bit more worried about their own safety, the safety of their children, the safety of this nation, than, dare I say, the COVID. Because everybody's suffering from COVID-19 fatigue these days, right? But when you see an America ablaze, and when you factor into the equation that, for example, in Kenosha, if you read the police reports there, many of the arrests that were made amidst all that violence, well, let's just say they were bussed into town to create unrest, anarchy, chaos, and violence. Think about that. But I will concede the point that at least Joe Biden finally mentioned it, but I can't help but think it's because the polls are telling them, you know, you might want to set the Green New Deal aside and you might want to get over all of the hand-wringing when it comes to COVID-19. And yes, it's awful. I am not minimizing 180,000 deaths. What? This as the caseload, COVID-19 has passed 6 million in this country. Yes, it's terrible. But I think the visual of seeing cities on fire across this nation says a whole lot more to voters these days than anything else. How about you? 970-353-1310, 877-353-1310. Drop me a text on our 1310 KFKA text line at 31996. Because you remember, this topic didn't even come up at the Democratic National Convention. But tell me, can you? What exactly does a radical socialist look like? 6:15 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com. This time check sponsored by the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse, where the curtain will rise again September 3rd with the timeless love story, Camelot. Candlelight Dinner Playhouse, Broadway in your backyard. Visit ColoradoCandlelight.com for more information.
Dan Patrick, The Hull Show, and Colin Cowherd are on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. Tune in to The Hull Show at noon and NOCO Now at 4. Back to Mornings with Gail on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Well, that seems to be the musical question du jour. This as Joe Biden, Dugout Joe, getting out of the basement, speaking in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania yesterday, asking that musical question, do I look like a radical socialist with a soft spot for rioters? Well, again, that is my Facebook question this morning. What exactly does a radical socialist look like? Now, once again, and got into this before the quarter hour break this morning. Joe Biden did perform, you know, he got through the speech. We'll put it that way. And I go back to a speech that got all of the glowing accolades at the Democratic National Convention, because he did do a good job on that speech. But I think the bar had been set so low, many of the party elite and the talking heads on the lamestream mainstream network were just hoping that he wouldn't stumble his way and commit too many gaffes throughout that speech. But Joe Biden, compare and contrast to the DNC, where the violent unrest across the nation wasn't even mentioned, didn't even register on their radar. At least he finally acknowledged the fact that rioting is not protesting. He said looting is not protesting. Setting fires is not protesting. None of this is a protesting. It's lawlessness, plain and simple. Perhaps they're getting a clue that this unrest across the country and, well, their cricket-like response to it, particularly at the DNC, might register at the ballot box. After weeks and weeks of virtual silence on the issue. And then, well, Joe Biden did a couple of times issue some rather tentative, timid criticism of the violence. Well, he had finally found sufficient courage to at least state the obvious to even the most casual observer. Once again, Joe Biden asking, and I'm asking you, what does a radical socialist look like? As he said, do I look like a radical socialist with a soft spot for rioters? Really? Notice, too, the subtle shift there. He said a radical socialist. No, he did not say a democratic socialist. I found that very interesting as well. And I really haven't figured out what the heck a democratic socialist is, but still working on that. But in asking that question, well, now that you've mentioned it, Joe, yeah, you really kind of do look like a radical socialist or a democratic socialist at the very least. So if he had stopped with his condemnation, writes Michael Goodwin in the New York Post, if he had stopped before that, yeah, it would have been enough progress. It would have been a good day for Joe Biden. But the foolishness that followed when he unveiled yet another approach that smells like an audition for a new argument, well, that is where he lost some ground. Make it a foolish, weak, inane argument. Because the finger pointing then commenced. As Joe Biden went on to say, President Trump can't stop the violence because for years he's fomented it. And he's not been part of the solution thus far. He's part of the problem. Well, with your silence, it could be argued, former Vice President Biden, along with your party's silence on all of the lawlessness, could it be argued that, your lack of a position until you were forced into it might also be part of the problem? Says Michael Goodwin, as trial balloons go, this one's made of lead. It won't fly. No, this dog won't hunt. Biden's beyond the pale claim is that the riots and the national surge in violent crime are part of a pattern. He added the coronavirus and the fight for racial justice as proof that America is out of control, and that Trump is the common denominator. He went on to say, well, murder is up 26% this year under Donald Trump. Well, the problem with this witch's brew that he has concocted is, let's just say, the ingredients don't meld. The most obvious contradiction is that virtually all these cities engulfed in destabilizing turmoil are in blue states, and they're run by Democratic mayors. Trump has offered to send in federal help. Mayors have generally said no. Think about this. Democratic mayors preside over the cities at the heart of the racial fires involving allegations of police misconduct. If there are bad cops on their forces, then why didn't the mayors supporting Biden remove them? And that's just one of the logical problems with the argument. But Biden, once again, is not appealing to reason. He's not appealing to logic. Only to that, rather emotional zone of anti-Trumpers. Nothing turns them on more than another excuse to justify their hatred for the president. Oh, and now they have one. It presumably is meant as a replacement from the excuse from last week. This, when the mainstream media declared that the murder surge Biden now founds troubling, really isn't that big of a deal. So perhaps, and we can hope, one day Biden and his propagandists will get their story straight and stick to it. Moreover, Biden's attempt to blame the president for the violence undercuts his condemnation of that violence. Giving the rioters an excuse basically gives them a pass. Think about it. And how, pray tell, is Trump responsible for riots that were started and continue with the goal of ending his presidency? Apparently, the rioters, the arsonists, common criminals, well, they were all good little boys and girls in the pre-Trump era, and their assault against America just demonstrates that they too are casualties of the president's toxic being. Well, the idea is just so idiotic that it only adds to the concerns, but don't ask them about it, about Biden's well-being. On top of all of his other health maladies, he too seems to be suffering from a serious bout of Trump derangement syndrome. Your thoughts this morning, 970-353-1310. Coming up, Maverick modeler Helmut Norpoff predicts another win for Trump. Not just a win, but a landslide. And why does that matter? Well, the Stony Brook political science professor was one of only a few who correctly predicted the outcome of the 2016 election. Professor Norpoff joins us at 635. 631 now, 1310 KFKA.
No code now. Weekdays at 4 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 1310 KFKA. It's always your turn to comment. Text KFKA to 31996 to get involved in the conversation. Mornings with Gail continues now on 1310 KFKA.
Well, with what, 64 days until the election? No, everyone won't be a winner. But political scientist Helmut Norpoff fields media calls every single week, mine among them, seeking comment on the upcoming presidential election. Why all the interest? Well, because in 2016, and we talked to him back in 2016, he was one of a handful of experts who correctly predicted the outcome of the presidential election. And he has enjoyed notable success forecasting elections based on something called a primary model. This is his primary model, a statistical representation of U.S. presidential races based on data going back more than a century. Professor Norpoff, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me again. Glad to be with you again.
Oh, it is great to talk with you as well. All right, so they call you a maverick modeler, but you get it right, so how can you be a maverick?
Well, that's the first. I don't think I've ever been called a maverick before. Well, because I'm an outlier. I'm the exception. I'm running against the grain in predicting that Donald Trump has a very high chance of being reelected.
Yeah, pretty much a landslide, as I understand it. So tell us about your primary model.
Well, as you said, it's over 100 years of primary elections, which I have distilled in a very simple lesson. And that is the party that nominates the primary winner or the stronger primary candidate wins the election in November. And that's been true pretty much for the last 100-plus years. And this time, Donald Trump had a commanding lead in the primary, especially in New Hampshire, which I pay a lot of attention to. And as we know, Joe Biden did pretty badly there, although he did better in South Carolina. But even the average of those two puts him nowhere near Donald Trump. So Donald Trump goes into November with a strong primary performance, plus, and that is another thing, he's a first-term president running for re-election. And if the two things come together, that fact and a very strong primary performance, it gives that candidate a very high chance, 91% in this case, of winning re-election.
91%, that's pretty significant. Now, the primary model has pretty good track record, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It those 27 elections that we had since 1912, when these presidential primaries were introduced, 25 out of those 27, the model gets it right.
And what makes your modeling different from other predictive models?
Well, I think I'm the only one who pays attention to presidential primaries. Other models like this they use the economy, they use presidential approval, and maybe some other things. So I'm really sort of the maverick in that sense that I put my faith in presidential primaries. I don't quite understand why people in my field, political scientists who study parties and elections, have not sort of done that. And not more people have tried it. You can probably tweak it some other ways, and I have done. But I don't see too many of my colleagues. They simply believe, and I've got some comments that says, unless you use the economy and presidential approval, your model is really no good. So I battle those kind of objections from people who do it differently.
642 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com. Helmut Norpoth is a professor in Stony Brook's Department of Political Science. Let's talk a little bit about approval ratings and polling, which polls I take with a very large pillar of salt. Now, you don't really focus on those, do you?
No, I don't include any opinion polls. I use sort of real polls, like real elections, which I think tell us a lot about how voters size up the candidates. And I always point out that a state like New Hampshire, even though it's small and maybe not a representative state for the country, but it is essentially wide open. It is not a sort of base election in which only the partisans turn out to vote. It rallies a lot of independents, and even it's open pretty much to people from the other party. So it's not really just a party contest, and that's why I think it is so predictive, because it puts the candidates to a real life test with all the bells and whistles of a real campaign, unlike a poll where you ask hypothetically, who you might vote for. And as we have seen last time in 2016, those polls were pretty wide off the mark.
Now, I might be getting a little far afield here, but what about the impact, for example, of COVID-19? 180,000 across the nation have died. 6 million have been diagnosed positive with this novel coronavirus. And the ongoing unrest that we're seeing across the country, are those wild card factors in the equation?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're what we sort of usually call the October surprises. They came a little early this year, and in March and April and May, and they keep on coming. It is I think for anybody who makes a prediction, a very difficult chore to incorporate something that is so unique. I would have to admit that if everything is done and my prediction turns out to be really wrong, that probably something like that made the difference. I mean, the only thing I can say is that if you look back, I mean, we've had a lot of elections in which things not as serious happened like this, but I mean, we always have sort of pretty unusual things happening. I mean, the election this year is compared often to 1968, in which we had very similar disturbances, riots, racial unrest, et cetera. And, I mean, the model gets it right. Or you have wartime elections like 1940 and 1944. So it's not unusual for real sort of odd things to be happening. And all I can say is that in the long run, things sort of worked out pretty well. I also like to say that, I mean, if you look at the polls, which, I mean, I'm a little skeptical about, but, I mean, Donald Trump in these polls didn't have a lead before all this stuff happened. I mean, he was behind Joe Biden for reasons that, I mean, may be obscure because Joe Biden wasn't really a big factor. He hadn't clinched the nomination. And Donald Trump in those polls is behind right now and maybe a little bit more, but I don't really see that some real big changes have happened in these polls. So the polls are what they are, and I think they have big problems. They had problems before, and they have problems now. And so all I can say is that I mean, the experience have told us, especially the last election, to be very wary of these polls.
What about the Democrats? I mean, was this President Trump's election to win or lose from the get-go? Could they have done anything to position themselves better?
Well, I think if Joe Biden had had a commanding performance, let's say, in the early primaries, if he had been a candidate who rallied the party behind him in commanding fashion, the way Donald Trump did in his primaries, I would say that he would have had a chance. But, of course, that didn't happen. And we know that the Democratic Party is sort of a divided party. We always talk about polarization between the parties. But, I mean, you look at the Democratic Party internally, between, let's say, the forces of Joe Biden, the kind of moderate, old-school Democrat, and you look at all the new forces, progressives, AOC, Bernie Sanders, et cetera. I mean, the party has a difficult time getting its act together, just like 1968. I think we sort of overlook that, and we only talk about polarization between sort of Trump and the Democrats. And so for the Democrats to have had a chance, they would have had to be on the same page from the get-go.
I can't help but think, since by your admission, you go against the grain with this primary model, and you probably get a little bit of clapback on that, don't you?
That's putting it mildly. I mean, I get hate mail. I get fan mail too. I should say a lot of people write me and say they pay attention to the model. They like the model, and of course they might like the outcome too that I predict. And I think much of it depends on whether you like the outcome that I predict or not. But I've getting a sort of a fair share of both. It rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and I mean, people who know me personally, I mean, they sort of give me some dirty looks and say, "Well, I mean, I respect your expertise, but I just hope you're wrong." I mean, I get that a lot, and that's sort of mild. I mean, that's sure. That's the mild version. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. It is a family show, but it all comes down to math, right?
Is what?
It all comes down to math.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what this primary model is based upon, right?
Well, it comes down to sort of real things. I mean, that's
real
what
things.
People sort
imagine
of overlook.
That.
I mean, it means and real things that are political that have to do with elections and I think it's a very unique opportunity for Americans to have these primaries. Most other countries don't. I mean, I sometimes get asked by people from other countries, could I apply your model in my country? And I say, well, do you have primaries? And well, they say, well, no, we don't. And even if they have them, they don't have them on the kind of scale that we have. And I think to ignore what they tell us for election, even as maybe a part of a prediction that uses other things, I think is a missed opportunity.
Professor Helmut Norpoth, a professor in Stony Brook's Department of Political Science. A pleasure as always. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure. Anytime. Love to talk to you.
And stay strong.
You too.
6:49 now, 1310 KFKA.
It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. The Block Party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m. For more on KFKA programs, podcasts, sports schedule, and news, go to 1310KFKA.com. Now back to Mornings with Gail.
Well, that didn't take long, now did it? 6:54 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310 KFKA.com. Northern Colorado's voice, Mornings with Gail, from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. All right, so we talked a little yesterday about the fact that United was changing their policy on what they charge to change your tickets, and alluded to the fact that, well, American and Delta probably wouldn't be far behind in picking up that mantle. Well, yeah, they said they were removing change fees on most domestic flights as the levies emerged as a new competitive battleground among airlines. Working from a piece out of the Wall Street Journal this morning by Doug Cameron. Now, the moves came a day after United Airlines said that it was permanently ending flight change fees for most domestic flights in the latest effort to boost demand in an air travel industry hit so hard by the pandemic. Sluggish rebound in passenger demand since April and concerns that COVID-19 cases could rise during the fall and winter months have pushed airlines to identify new competitive strategies. Y'all think? The carriers are, I mean, all it took was a few keystrokes, for heaven's sakes, and they're charging us. I mean, are they going to charge us for the air that we breathe? How about if you dare to venture down the aisle of the steaming aluminum tube into the Hearn? Are they going to charge you for one-ply toilet paper? I mean, come on now. Carriers are seeking to provide passengers with more reassurance about returning to the skies. Now, Southwest, to their credit, has never charged a baggage or change fee, a policy it has successfully used as a marketing tool. Now, American has gone a step further than United and Delta, dropping fees for international flights to and from Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean, as well as most domestic tickets. We need to give people a very good reason to do business with American Airlines, this according to their chief revenue officer. Like United, American, and Delta didn't remove charges from long-haul flights, many of which are operated in tandem with overseas partners. American also took steps to bolster its basic economy tickets by allowing upgrades, which still can't be changed or refunded, but offer stripped-down fares aimed at luring passengers from budget carriers such as Southwest and Spirit Airlines. This is American and Delta follow suit, with United ending those domestic change fees. 6:57 now, 1310 KFKA.
Dan Patrick, The Hull Show, and Colin Cowherd are on Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA.
Now, 1310 KFKA. 1310 KFKA. com, Northern Colorado's voice. All right, got a lot yet to cover this morning. We'll update you on that Cameron Peak fire, now at 23,000 acres, and according to officials, a long, long way from containment. And maybe the fun in the sun at Horsetooth Res isn't over yet, though the water level continues to drop. Boating will continue, at least for a while. 1310 KFKA Greeley Loveland, it's 7 o'clock.
No code now. Weekdays at 4 on Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA.